Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and my isolating friend, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, Windy.
Dark times, boys. Very dark times. Nathan, you pretty much predicted this.
Yeah, not like, not in any way that should be impressive, just that, like, I went away and read some stuff before it was on the news, basically.
How are you bearing up, mate?
As you will know from trying to organise a time for recording the podcast, I'm keeping myself socially busy without leaving the house.
Blimey, you are.
Skyping friends for dinner, and I am doing games nights with friends, and I'm taking part in politics over the internet in a sort of a voice chat kind of way, and even dates over online as well. So, you know, there's a lot going on, and I think that that is the way to do it, to keep that sort of regularity, that sort of social anticipation and experience through the online, however you can. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've done a couple of games nights already. I've played online poker with friends twice, which has been good. It's been good fun. I had a really bad experience over the weekend. I had a call from my mum on Sunday morning to say that my dad was really unwell and she thought he had the virus. My dad's been healthy for pretty much my whole life until just before Christmas, where he had pneumonia. So the thought of him having the virus was absolutely terrifying. And, you know, I was essentially spending the whole of the Sunday contemplating the death of my father. And I just felt absolutely horrendous all day, just like worried sick. I can't believe I'm saying this, but luckily it seems like he's got a recurrence of pneumonia, which is sort of a lesser of two evils, which is crazy to say, but he's making a sort of slow but sure recovery, touch wood, and seems to be a lot better today. But it's just, it felt all too real. And obviously, see the media, the constant discussion around this virus just brings it makes it so sort of oppressive. It's everything around us is coronavirus, and we're stuck inside because of coronavirus, and the whole normality of daily life is different because of coronavirus. So you can't help but think of anything that is just on your mind constantly. And it's tough. It's really tough. Buddy, how are you finding things?
I'm busier now than I've ever been in most of my working life. I work in internal comms, and as you can imagine, trying to talk to 2,000-3,000 people who are now scattered across the country, stuck in bedrooms and in kitchen tables, and worrying about what's going to happen in the charity industry and everything else like that. I've got a lot of comms to get through and a lot of people to try and talk to and reach. So I'm pretty busy, man. Keeping busy.
Are you feeling the pressure from that?
Yeah, I'll be getting a salary cut from May for the next 3-4 months, and to try and kind of fight back against, we've got just no income coming in because everything's shut, no events, no shops, very low fundraising. So, but It's good to join both of you guys here to talk about a victory, which is something that hasn't happened for a while for Tottenham.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're going to do, and this is Bardi's idea, so he gets full credit.
And I don't think, I know you, Windy. Also, if it doesn't work, it was Bardi's idea, so I see you.
It's going to work really well. Do you know what? Okay, I'll introduce the topic and then I'll say what my initial thoughts were on this. So yep. we're going to talk about our 5-1 win against Chelsea in the second leg of the League Cup semi-final from 2002. Is that all correct?
Yep.
Yep. When you initially mentioned this idea, I was very sceptical. I was like, why would anyone want us to talk about this? It's just a game from nearly 20 years ago. You guys said, watch the game. We've provided a link. Watch it. Make some notes. See what you think. I loved it. I absolutely loved watching this game back. It was so much fun. There's a few things that I'm sure will come out in our conversations around this, around how football's changed. But the game itself was a banger from a Spurs perspective. Really, really enjoyable watch from start to finish. So do you want to start by taking us through the teams, Bardi?
Yeah, so Spurs at the time in 2002, I don't know if many people were familiar with Spurs back then, but we'd normally go with Casey Keller, was like our starting goalkeeper. We had just signed Dean Richards, who was like our main kind of centre-back, who was cup-tied for this. So we changed our first-choice goalkeeper. Dean Richards was cup-tied, and our main kind of number nine at the time was Les Ferdinand, who was out with concussion. So Spurs went to, which I always find interesting, switched to a 3-5-2 with Sullivan in goal, a back three of Chris Perry, Ledley King, Anthony Gardner. Our wing-backs that evening were Simon Davies, who's naturally right-footed, was playing on the left.
No, he played on the right.
Oh, sorry, playing on the right.
That's correct.
And Tarico playing on the left, who was very two-footed. We had a heavyweight midfield of Gus Poyet, an old Gus Poyet, Tim Sherwood and Darren Anderton. And then our two up front were Teddy Sheringham and Iverson stepping in for Les Ferdinand.
So what was interesting as well about the wing-backs is that they were both second choice at the time. We had Stephen Carr, who was a fantastic fullback who often played wing-back under Glenn Hoddle. And then Christian Ziga on the left, who was, fantastic player with great pedigree. Wasn't in his absolute prime when he was at Spurs, I would say. We didn't really necessarily see his best form, but he was a very good player. So Davis and Tarico were second choice, but were very prominent in this game. It was classic Hoddle, the 3-5-2. The other thing that I noticed, which was interesting, was Iverson very much led the line in the role that you would have expected Les Ferdinand to do, with Sheringham, who was in his second spell at Spurs and a bit older, playing more of a sort of tip of a midfield diamond almost, with Sherwood at the base, Anton to the right, Poyet to the left. And that was interesting because it was something we saw under Pochettino as well. And Nathan, what did you make when you saw that team selection? Did any of those players did you have preconceptions of those players, basically?
I don't know how much you want me to jump ahead, essentially, but my perception of Tim Sherwood is as the idiot of a coach that he is, and the way he talks in public, and his the way he verbalizes his conception of football in a very brutish, unsophisticated, and frankly, very insular and pretty dumb way, which is not so much what was reflected in the game. And it's also interesting that he sort of fairly infamously spoke about how Makélélé destroyed football with inventing the number six role, as if that's at all what happened. So I guess that was one of my sort of preconceived notions. I found it interesting that Anderton played in a central role, although that's something I want to come back to later. And I was surprised that Ben Davies was still playing football back then.
This was an interesting Chelsea team selection as well, Bardi. They had a very young John Terry at the back. Alongside him, Marcel Desailly, who obviously was an excellent player. We'll talk a little, I'm sure, about his performance in this game, but it was not good. They had William Gallas at left back, who obviously later joined Spurs. Wasn't renowned as a left back, was more of a centre back at the time, but did play left back a fair bit. Mario Milchior on the right. And then talk us through the midfield, Bardi.
It was quite a cumbersome midfield. The striking thing about Chelsea was the distinct lack of pace. There was a midfield of Mario Stanic, Frank Lampard, Emmanuel Petit and Boulevard Zenden, who at the time was quite a coup for them to sign. But I never really rated, I never really liked the cut of his jib. So that was their midfield. And it was Petit coming off the back of quite a few injuries. And then playing in front of them was Gudjonsson, who also came to Spurs and had quite a good successful loan spell, alongside Hasselbank, who I kind of forgot about Hasselbank, how dangerous he was. But the way the commentators would refer to him, the way everybody kind of held their breath when he got the ball 30 yards out, just reminds you that he could properly spank it. And he was a fearsome striker, a fearsome number nine.
Indeed. And interestingly, he took the set pieces also. He was sort of seen as a dead ball specialist, corners, free kicks, anything. So that intrigued me as well, because he's a player who was very good in the air, could easily have been on the end of those things, but was seen as so good from those dead ball scenarios that it was worth taking him out of the box. Spurs absolutely fly out the block in this game. They were terrific in the opening exchanges, and Tirico got Joy down the left twice, and we score from one of those forays forward when, and it's lovely, Stephen Eason punishes John Terry, who's dallying on the ball. Looking back now, that is a glorious thing to see Terry dallying in his own box and Everson sort of nabbing a goal from that situation. And I think that we started really quickly, of course, but getting that early goal after a couple of minutes must have really relaxed the players, because they certainly played in a relaxed way. The other thing that struck me in the opening exchanges as quite interesting was that in Hoddle's 3-5-2, the right and left-sided centre-backs took the throw-ins, which is something you don't see quite so much of in modern back threes or back fives. Normally it's the wing-back that takes the throws. Did that stand out to you, Nathan?
Yeah, I was... That kind of threw me a little bit, because I think that, like, a team trying to do that would probably be punished pretty often for that now. I think that is simply a situation where it's just a linear improvement of, like, if you push forward like a wide centre back like that on a set piece, the other team are going to turn the ball over and make you pay for it, I think.
Right. Now. Okay. So you see that as a sort of something, because it was a novel formation, it worked, but perhaps wouldn't work now.
I think so. Not with an absolute certainty, but I struggle to imagine that working out now.
Okay, interesting. And Nathan, what did you think of the back three? So I don't know how much you knew about Anthony Gardner and Chris Perry. You're a little younger than Bardi and I. But Chris Perry, sort of, he was renowned as being a really good man marker, but he plays kind of a sweeper role in this formation.
Yeah.
With King to his right and Gardner to his left, both very front foot players, want to come out and win the ball and then pass forward. What do you make of that trio?
So I was at Ledley King's testimonial, and Perry played then. So I sort of made the assumption that he was held in, like, at least moderate esteem in order to have been, like, selected for that. So that was my only real perception of Perry. Like you said, he swept up. I was fairly well impressed with that. And then Gardner is someone who I've maybe sort of a couple of times seen him mentioned on Twitter in pretty negative light. And I thought, considering that, he looked fine.
Which is quite unfair on Anthony Gardner, because he was a bit of a prospect. When he first broke through, there was real hope for the King and Gardner partnership. And in this game, I thought he played really well. He covered he covered his rampaging fullback very well. It was quite interesting that Chelsea had nobody playing in the kind of spaces in between the lines. Like, these days, we're obsessed with people operating in those half spaces. I don't even think it was a term back then. And it was very clear gaps in the pitch. And King and Gardner would just move into it, pick up the ball, and stop Hasselbank and Gudjonsson, who was a very good link man, from getting anywhere. And Perry was always there, available for almost like a get-out ball. If Spurs were under pressure, hit it back to Kerry. Perry was obviously rubbish on the ball, and it would just go straight back to the keeper. But it was quite a cunning move by Sherwood to put his three centre backs up against two very dangerous centre backs.
Indeed. And, you know, one of the stars of the game, undoubtedly, was Teddy Sheringham. And in the first sort of 10 minutes, he's doing everything. He's winning headers. Mm. He's playing first-time passes. And then he absolutely two-foot Bolo Zenden with a real savage challenge, which, like, cuts his leg open quite badly to the extent where he has to go off injured. And my initial thought was, that is definitely getting punished in the modern game. I don't think it was even called as a foul.
No, it wasn't. The commentators were almost like cheering it on. Like, good honest tackle. Good passionate derby tackle.
So Zenden goes off and Chelsea bring on Sam Dalabona. Do you remember him, Bardi? Mm. The Italian kid.
Yeah, of course. He was quite the prospect. But he was tipped to have a good career. But him coming on really does kind of disjoint Chelsea for a bit, because he's a central midfielder and Zenden's a wide man. And you could see there's a lot of confusion in their midfield. They don't know where to go. Lampard doesn't feel comfortable moving wide. Petit, with his old legs by then, doesn't feel comfortable. And Spurs really do capitalise on that lack of movement in their midfield, which is weird considering our midfield contained to one veteran and one kind of broken footballer.
I watched this game with my dad because I wanted to sort of capture like the experience of watching a game live. I was kind of, to be honest, I was kind of dreading this a little bit because I don't have too fond an impression of football from like before 2010, basically. I went, so for the recent Mourinho video I did, I went back to watch some 2003-2004 clips and I found an Arsenal-Chelsea game from back then, and it was just impossible to watch. And I posted a minute-long clip of it on YouTube and it absolutely blew up all over Twitter with people going, wow, this is what football used to be. You know, nostalgia goggles, all of that kind of commentary, especially Liverpool fans who really like to rub it in. So I was kind of dreading watching this. So I decided to watch it with my dad, and he was doing what he always does, which is complaining to the ref about the decisions that he's making, which is ridiculous enough when you're watching the game at home and it's a live game and it's like, well, the ref can't hear you, so I wouldn't worry about it. But even more so when it was 20 years ago and it doesn't really matter anymore. But he was getting irate and he was saying, well, look, the ref's called that up, but he hasn't called this up, so it's inconsistent. And I'm just laughing at that. Like, don't worry, this game's probably going to work out all right for us.
And the referee is Mark Holsey, who basically looks the same, I thought. He hadn't really aged a great deal since then. Just a little less hair. Sheringham's done Zenden. Dalabona's come on into midfield. Zenden started on the left. Dalabona plays in the middle. So Chelsea have had a bit of a reshuffle. I mentioned that Sheringham was one of the stars. And in the first 20 minutes, one of the other key players is Tim Sherwood, who is constantly able to find space in the middle of a very congested pitch because his movement is so intelligent. And he's just keeping things ticking over. He's linking plays. He's finding full passes. He's doing everything you'd want from an elite level sort of holding midfielder. And it's him who he scores the second goal, which is an absolute belter. It's the Anderton Sheringham corner, which many people will remember fondly. Anderton would pick out the run of Sheringham towards the edge of the sort of 6-yard box or a little bit further out, and Sheringham would rifle a first time shot in at goal. Well, this time Sheringham's kind of a decoy and Sherwood makes that movement and hits it first time, and it's such a sweet hit, Bardi, isn't
That's interesting.
Yeah, we won the corner because it was a long ball into Sheringham, who managed to flick it down, and Poyet has a fantastic kind of sliding volley, very like Lamella style on the floor volley from distance, which forces the corner. And yeah, in my head, I always thought it was Sheringham that scored this goal. And when I went back and watched it, I was shocked to see it was Sherwood, because I don't know, my memory just said that's a Anderton Sheringham corner. And I think with Sherwood, Nathan mentioned it already, we've forgotten that this was like a Premier League winning captain footballer who did get, I think he got a couple of caps for England. And it's a shame, well, it's not a shame, he's an idiot, but his career has been kind of tarnished by his mouth in later years.
So Anderton, who makes the assist for that goal, ends up getting man of the match. And I think rightly so. What was interesting is this is Anderton in the sort of towards the end of his career. And Anderton, for much of his Spurs career, was known as Sick Note. He could barely string games together. He was always seen as this young player who, if he could just get fit, would be a star. Mm. He was great for England, particularly in Euro 96. And the interesting thing is in this game, it's his 30th of the season. And that's the first time in sort of two or three years that he's managed to put together 30 games in the season. And he's playing a kind of really quite athletic box-to-box role. He's kind of getting up and down the pitch really well. Nathan, what did you make of Anderton, having probably not seen him a great deal?
So I spoke with Anderton a couple of years ago, and I asked him about this sort of exact thing, which is that he was primarily known as a winger and his crossing game, but he also played a few games in central midfield. So I asked him about it was under the lens of asking about how would he perform in modern football given his sort of positional versatility, but he spoke to me about playing in the middle of the pitch, and he said when you're a winger, you're starved of the ball. When you finally get it, you're caught in between, well, I'd better do something dramatic with it. I better really make a difference because I might not see the ball again for ages. And then if that doesn't pay off, then you're costing your team, and now it's going to be even longer before you see the ball. Whereas he says, if you play central midfield, you get plenty of touches, you get plenty of time to wait for a good moment to take a risk versus, you know, playing it safe half the time as well. And that was really underlined in this match. So what something that really sort of shocked me about this match is like how able I was to sort of read it tactically. I thought that is something that I would have like a great difficulty with, but essentially the wing backs were constantly free for us, arriving late in the final third. So it looks like it was the Chelsea wingers' duty to track the wing backs' runs, and they were clearly uncomfortable or not used to it or just not up to it at all, because our first three goals all come from moves where the wing back arrives. We play up one side of the pitch, whether we play long or short, and then it goes to Anderton, who just pings it perfectly on a plate into the path of the wing back on the opposite side, and Chelsea are absolutely lost for that.
It's a dream scenario, really, for Anderton, having wing backs on either side to pick out. Third goal is an absolute beauty. It starts off with a kind of hoofed clearance from Neil Sullivan. Sheringham flicks it on. Tirico kind of holds the ball up on the left. He finds Anderton, who picks out Poyet. And Poyet was not a great player at this point in his career. He was kind of over the hill, but what he did have was a terrific awareness of those around him. And he lays off this, what looks like an impossible layoff, but he finds Sheringham with the most perfect layoff, and Sheringham just like slices through the ball deliberately and hits the corner. I think perhaps Carlo Cudicini in goal should have done better with that, but it's a sexy looking goal because of the pass from Anderton, the layoff from Poyet, and then the way that Sheringham hits it. Bardi, you've mentioned here that the way Teddy plays here is quite reminiscent of Kane at times. Do you think that is something that we could see from Kane in the future, this kind of link role and then popping up on the edge of the box?
Yeah, definitely. I think Sheringham was always a player that never had he never had the legs, and it was a criticism that was often thrown at him. But in this game, his first of all, his intensity, because that move starts, yes, it's a long ball, but it's a long ball which he outmuscles John Terry, and it's not just a flick on, it's a very intelligent kind of sideways header which he did throughout his career at Tottenham. He was an amazing header of the ball. And just the way that he would drop deep off the main man, he had players running alongside him. You could almost see that is Kane, and then player running off him is Dele. And it's a combination that we've seen many times these days. And watching this game and the way the players were moving off him, I think as Kane's ankles or just his body stops him from being a player that will run in behind, this is a real role model for him. And the goal is brilliant. It's long ball. It's long hoofed football. But then once we've got into their opposition half, it's very smart. Tirico, Anderton combining well. If you watch it back, the moment Poyet kind of runs from deep, and it just sums up Tottenham perfectly in this game. That intensity to get bodies forward and just attack, attack, and keep going for it. Because you know, we're Spursy, and even though we're winning on aggregate, the game could change quite quickly. And I think this Tottenham team, we couldn't rely on defence. We had to keep going and almost bury Chelsea. And this goal was a beautiful thing. And I think they still show it on the big screen at White Hart Lane now. That's how good a goal it was.
So this was not long after half-time. The first leg of this tie was 2-1 to Chelsea. So this puts us ahead for the first time. And we're then hugely helped by a case of mistaken identity, which leads to Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink being sent off instead of Mario Melchiot. Now, this is interesting because in commentary, Ron Atkinson makes a comment about video replays. and how he would be in favour of video replays to correct incidents like this, which I thought, I found that really fascinating. Sort of thinking 18 years ago, this was a talking point. Nathan, did that stand out to you as well?
It's a slow moving process, isn't it?
I mean, it's almost embarrassing seeing the referee give the red card to the wrong player. Sheringham's sort of saying to the ref as well, you know, this isn't a sending off offence. He gets a sort of push in the face. And you kind of get the impression that the players are trying to correct the referee's decision, because Chelsea are going to lose their key man, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink, who's probably the one player who could get them back into the game. Whereas Mario Melchiot was, you know, he's a right back. They need a right back, but he's nothing compared to Hasselbaink. They'd much rather have lost Melchiot. So I was surprised that no one sort of stepped in and just corrected that awful mistake from the ref. What did you make of it, Bardi?
Yeah, there's quotes post-game where Ranieri's like, everybody told the referee he'd got the wrong man. Even Hasselbaink was like, you got the wrong man. But everybody got involved, and you can quite clearly see that they're telling him, but he just wouldn't listen. And yeah, you know, a lot of things, when you go back and look, VAR would have sorted quite a few things out back then, and it would have been probably quite useful.
Yeah,
Sheringham gets a yellow after Melchior leaves the pitch. After Hasselbaink. Oh God, now I've done it. After Hasselbaink leaves the pitch. And like, I wasn't sure, and I'm still not sure if Sheringham gets the yellow for his like initial involvement in sort of the scuffle, or if he gets a yellow card for protesting too much that he sent off the wrong player.
Yeah.
I mean, when you go back and watch it, when people who listen to this go back and watch it, you have to watch Tarico throughout. He's such a sly little man.
He's a little shithouse, isn't he?
He's moving around the edge of the circle, just kind of clipping people's ears, trying to spark a reaction. He's a right little dirty little guy.
He is so funny. He wasn't the best player in the world. We signed him from Ipswich, and he was quite kind of a functional player, but he was like, he was our 90s shithouse, basically. he was our 90s Lamella. He was Argentinian. Or he is Argentinian.
Yeah. Argentine to Tottenham, mate. It's a good combination.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And he's got a good head of hair on him as well, hasn't he? His nickname was Treacle.
Really?
Yeah, because a lot of Spurs fans couldn't say his name, so they called him Treacle instead.
Jesus.
I think his like fellow pros called him Tano, but he was Treacle in the stands. So we then get our fourth goal, and the goal scorer is Simon Davis, who is really young at this point. He's probably been with us for a year. He joined us from Peterborough. Young, sort of exciting Welsh winger who's playing wing back in this game, which isn't his natural position by any stretch, but he does a really good job throughout. And Ron Atkinson is loving Davis's performance. He's like constantly talking him up, saying what a threat he is, and he kind of gets his reward for his hard work. It's a kind of nice bit of tigerish play, I would say, by Everson, who has a low-key impressive match here. A switch of play from Anderton, and then Davis, it's kind of an unlikely shot, really. He's not got a great deal of the goal to aim at, but he kind of, from an angle you wouldn't expect, he picks out the near post. And again, perhaps there's more Kudacini could do to keep out, but it's a very precise finish, Bardi.
Yeah, and it's just another example of just how eager they were. I mean, we're against 10 men, we're 4-2 up on aggregate, so it's going to take a proper disaster for us not to win this. But once again, it's Anderton picking the ball up in the middle and just like opening the whole pitch up and just inviting Davies to get forward. And Davies, he took the shot, and I didn't remember this goal. I remembered the feeling of it. I was at university watching this, but even watching it now, where it pings off the post, it's a nice feeling.
Absolutely. So 4-0 in this game. We're looking like we're going to go through. So we start making some subs, and who comes on? Sergei Rebrov. Remember him? Failed striker signing, I would say. So he's a Ukrainian striker that was signed for a huge fee at the time. I think it was 11 million, Bardi. Is that right?
Yeah, I remember vividly when he signed. It was going to win us the league because his partnership with Shevchenko at Kiev was something that back in the early days of the Champions League, where football wasn't as saturated as it is now, and you didn't know players until they just appeared on ITV. And those two made an incredible combination. And when we signed one of them, we thought we'd really signed the better of the two, but obviously we didn't. Sheva was the proper player. Rebrov, he did okay. He had his moments, but he wasn't half the player Shevchenko was.
Absolutely. The other man that comes on is Øyvind Leonardsson. So Leonardsson was an interesting player. He made his name in the Premier League with Wimbledon, as did Chris Perry, as did Ben Thatcher, who was also on our books at the time. So Wimbledon had a couple of really good seasons, and then their team kind of got picked apart by other clubs. Leonardsson originally went to Liverpool. It didn't quite work out for him there, so he joined Spurs. And he was okay for Spurs. He was nothing special. I'd say he was more of a squad player. He came on for Poyet, who goes absolutely insane when he gets substituted. He's like jumping around on the pitch, windmilling, and the fans are loving it. Rebrov comes on for Iverson, and after like 4 minutes, Leonardsson sets up Rebrov for a fairly simple finish to make it 5-0, and our fans are singing 1-0 to the substitutes, which I thought was fantastic. Nathan, what did you make of those subs? Do you remember either of those players?
I'm aware of Rebrov on he was used as a tool to explore Soldado, essentially. He's famous for his failure. And I'd heard the sort of what Bardi explained, the sort of the Shevchenko story, and my dad repeated it to me again after we watched the match, where he said, yeah, we thought we'd signed, you know, or so I went back and I looked at Rebrov. Apparently he still holds the record for most goals scored ever in the Ukrainian league to this day. So yeah
he had some pedigree. It just did not work out for him at Spurs at all. He just didn't look physically up to the demands of the Premier League, to be honest. And it was a bit like Soldado, in the way that after sort of 10-15 games, he just saw his head drop and he lost all confidence in himself, and those around him lost confidence in him. It was very similar in many ways in the way it panned out. So at this point in the match, Ron Atkinson's picking his man of the match, and he says Sherwood and Sheringham have given 10 out of 10 performances, so Anderton, who's won this, must have given 11 out of 10. And it's hard to disagree. Anderton is absolutely sensational, and equally Sherwood and Sheringham put in immaculate performances too, so just lovely to see from Spurs. Chelsea get on back, though. They'd made a sub with Mikel Forsell, the young Finnish striker, coming on, and he scores an absolute banger. It's a really nice finish on his left foot, which I had totally forgotten about. I was looking forward to seeing where the consolation came from in some ways, because I couldn't remember it at all. It's a great finish, Bardi.
Yeah, and it's the first time Chelsea actually have a player with a bit of pace and a bit of direction to them. And you could see he gets the ball, he turns, and all of a sudden the Spurs back line looks like the Spurs back line from that time, where they're terrified. And he drives a goal and he buries it. And he was a highly thought of prospect who should have had a great professional career, but it didn't quite work for him because he was naturally right footed, and that was off his weaker foot. It was a lovely finish from a finish. Sorry, I apologise.
Oh dear,
get out. I've laid my cards clearly on the table in terms of man of the match. But Nathan, which players impressed you the most? Who stood out to you?
Yeah, no, it's the three S's, absolutely, definitely. Hang on, no, that's not right, is it? Jesus Christ!
sick note, Sherry.
Yes, S for sick note. That's exactly it. That's what I was thinking. S for sick note. But if I had to pick one, it would be Sherwood. I was just so complete. I know we've already done this, but I was so just absolutely blown away by his first time passing, receiving the ball under pressure, interpretation of space, passing with his interceptions. I didn't think that Sherwood was a crap player, right? I understood that he was a league winner. But I guess I sort of assumed that he was like a box to box, hardworking and a bit of a bruiser, but he was like a really cultured footballer who at least in this game played as a number six. And I think in a lot of ways was before his time.
Yeah, I agree. High footballing IQ, had good understanding of the roles of everyone in the team and knew where his place in the structure, and just played very sensibly, cautiously, but also playing forward when it needed to go forward. And what works so well for him is having a player like Anderson alongside him who has just got the most phenomenal passing range. And it really sort of made me long for a quality passer in midfield. It's hard to sort of think back and think of many better passers of the ball in midfield in recent years than Anderton. I'd say Carrick was up there, but he wasn't as ambitious with his passing.
I was going to say that Anderton's performance reminded me of that season we had Carrick in midfield, where he not very combative, but just always putting a toe in and coming away with the ball, opening up play. I made a note of that to say that he did remind me a lot of kind of Spurs Carrick.
Lovely to watch that midfield combination of Sherwood and Anderson. I thought Poyet to a lesser degree, but he as Bardi says earlier, he's kind of worth his weight for these direct running into the box. He helps with the overloads, which is a crucial part of Hoddle's system. So Nathan, what else stood out to you about this sort of this 3-5-2, this performance from Spurs? What's Hoddle trying to do, do you think?
It's really hard to know how much is like things that Hoddle saw and like Hoddle's intention and like how he might have predicted that Chelsea would approach the game, watching just this one game on its own. Like, it really worked out in our favour because we were combative in midfield. We used great use of Teddy's movement and his aerial ability, and the wing backs arriving late just completely undid Chelsea. And it's hard to know like whether that is something that Hoddle in any way saw, or whether he was just someone who liked a back three because, I don't know, he likes playing in the back three as a player or whatever. So maybe it's something I need to go away and watch some more games of to sort of get more of an impression. But like, I guess you could say, well, we didn't then change our shape after Chelsea changed their shape, so maybe there's something in there, but I don't know. It's hard to say.
And I think we should probably say a little bit more about Teddy Sheringham before we close out, because I think he's 35 or 36 in this game. He's in his second spell at Spurs. He was my favourite player when I was growing up. I just absolutely adored him, and this was a reminder of why. He's just so classy, so elegant. Every pass is so precise. You feel like he finesses everything he does, even when he doesn't need to necessarily. But he's also really, really good in the air. He wins a lot more than you'd expect. He's not short by any stretch. He's probably 6 foot, 6 foot one, something like that. But he wins more than you'd expect, definitely. He's a handful. The way he drops off into that pocket of space is fantastic, because he draws out defenders with him. And he's got a lovely awareness and appreciation of his teammates. I mean, what a player he was, Bardi.
Yeah, he was. And I think in everything, we're forgetting the magnitude of this victory for Tottenham, because we hadn't beaten Chelsea. We seem to go on these kind of long runs without beating them since 1990. So it'd been 12 years since we'd beaten them. So it was a massive performance all round, and quite a monumental one. But unfortunately, it didn't lead anywhere for Hoddle and for Tottenham. And that will always be a big shame that this result, even as amazing as it is and great as it is to go and watch, that it's always there's a little bit of a tinge when I see it now.
Do you have any thoughts on why that might be?
Well, we lost the final.
No, why it never quite worked out for Hoddle Spurs?
I just think the whole principle of relying on older players, that they were never going to get any better. They were never going to improve. And the system, whatever system he played, it wasn't something that they could carry on and build upon. It was always going to be one match to the next match, kind of getting through and getting through the results. And I think that ultimately was the undoing of Spurs. And perhaps what we've seen after that under Levy is Spurs adopting a kind of policy to go for younger players and try and build up and build something that is longer lasting rather than going for the quick fix, which is a lot of these signings that Hoddle made were.
Lovely stuff. I hope you've enjoyed that throwback analysis of Tottenham 5, Chelsea 1 from 2002. What I will do is I'll put the YouTube link in the show notes. So if you fancy keeping yourself occupied one evening during isolation with a wonderful Spursy night at a cavernous old White Hart Lane where the noise is just tremendous. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't recommend this enough. As I said, I had very little expectations for this. I thought it was going to be a chore to watch, but I loved every second. So So, Bardi, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
It's also worth it to see Daniel Levy sat next to Glenn Hoddle, and Levy's got not, I wouldn't call it a full head of hair, but it's a smattering of hair upon his head.
Nice, nice, sweet. All right, boys, take care of yourselves in these challenging times.
Bye, Rindy.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at DavyShambles and his SoundCloud, DLindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.